Hi, my name is Sean Taylor. That guy over there is my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. the Objective Geek of YouTube and Twitter fame. And we are so glad you could be here right now because we have Top 10 Avatar Deaths Part 2 to discuss today. There it is, the right slide. And so today we're going to cover numbers 5 through 1. And then we're going to throw in some honorable mentions because there's a surprising amount of death in the Avatar universe. A surprising amount. I don't know if we disclaimed last time. I think it's kind of obvious. But just to throw it out there, we only considered things that were on screen or in text, right? It could be a flashback, but we had to see it. It couldn't just be like a reference to, oh, yeah, he died back then.
Yeah.
That was kind of our only...
So we didn't include Monk Yatsu, didn't even include Katara's mom.
Because you know that Monk Yatsu's would have been sick in that room full of the dead firebenders. You know that had to be cool. Flashbacks, okay, if the flashback is shown on screen. References, not okay. That's really the only barrier. And so I'm just really quickly going to recap from last week so they don't have to go listen back. Number 10 was Roku. Number 9 was Hiroshi Sato. Number 8 was Lek. Number 7.5 was Yoon. They had to stay that one in last moment. Number 7.5 was Yoon. Number 7 was Janju. Number 6 was the Earth Queen. So, Chris, that's where we left off. Anything you would like to note before we jump in with number 5?
I'm going to say this the last time on how's my week going. Tears of the Kingdom's freaking amazing.
Oh, awesome. I didn't even ask you how your week was. Chris, how is your week? I thought I covered it and how was your birthday in my mind.
I was wondering how that day was.
Yeah. How's the rest of the days in between there?
Great.
I've got a plug to make for this week. Episode 10, so this would have been last week, but episode 10 of season 3 of Ted Lasso was a
wait, delight. I haven't watched it.
It was a delight.
Come on or what?
Episode
it came on
10
yesterday, right?
No. Is Wednesday.
Oh.
Okay, so this is always confusing. We're recording on 5/19. The episode will not be released until 5/27. But 5/19, as of 5/19, episode 10 came out on Wednesday. So episode 10 came out on like 5/17. So by the time you see this, episode 11 will also be out. But episode 10, I just want to throw out there, was an uninhibited delight to watch from beginning to end. I love it.
I think we would do... I've been loving the season of Ted Lasso. I think we'll do another deviation of Avatar content and just discuss Ted Lasso season 3 when it's all done.
I don't know if our fans like it, but I feel like we owe it to ourselves just to get to talk about it a little bit.
It's the final season. I say that as if there's been a bunch of seasons. There's only
Listen, nobody's going to leave money on the table. It'll spin off somehow. You know, we may not know where how, but like it won't be done as a universe. But yeah, the final season of a great show. So yeah, I'm wearing my Richmond shirt today.
Oh, nice.
Where did I wear it? Like last week, and somebody asked me if I was a fan of soccer or just the show. I was like, I have never watched an entire soccer match in my life.
Soccer seems so boring.
I've gone to...
The thing is, the show knows that. The show isn't about...
You notice the show only shows you like one exciting part per occasional soccer match, and that's it.
They'll go 2 episodes without a soccer match. They'll do a montage of just soccer scores and not even the matches.
Yeah, they'll just be like, Richmond reels off 8 straight wins, and you're like, can we see any of the I've gone to 2 soccer matches in person here in Kansas City, and that's enough for me. And everybody's like, yeah, but it's a cool environment. It's like, you know what, my couch is also very comfortable, and I just want to throw that out there. But great show, Ted Lasso, and if you like soccer, I hope it brings you joy.
Chris, football, Sean.
Football is life.
Football's life. I love him.
He is great, and he shines also in episode 10. I love him in episode 10.
I hope he's that... He doesn't have to be that happy in real life, but I hope he is somewhat a little bit of that.
He's got such a genuine feeling smile that you feel like it's more than just
it's
practice
a smile
for acting. You just...
You would have to... There's no way he's faking that smile. It is specifically the smile for some reason.
It is. It's so charming.
But the smile mostly.
So charming. Did you actually say, have you watched
episode 10? I haven't watched it. Okay. I've been playing so much Tears of the Kingdom. My free time goes to Tears
Chris, how did we not even talk about Tears of the Kingdom? We didn't even say anything about Tears of the Kingdom. Tears of the Kingdom is already maybe a top 5 Switch game, and I've only spent about 10 hours in it. And the Switch game library is massive.
It might be the best Zelda game. And no. I said that about Breath of the Wild.
Chris, I think I still, currently in this exact moment, I think I still like Breath of the Wild a hair better.
I think so. I put in probably about 30 hours. I think the gameplay, the mechanics is better. Like every power I like using, like in Breath of the Wild, it was like
I use the bombs a lot, and that's about it.
Yeah, the bombs, that's it. Like I use the stasis every now and then. Although stasis would be really cool into the kingdom,
but you, Chris, like, I don't want to spoil it, but I think you get some kind of stasis later on, don't you?
I don't know. If I had a feeling you get something later on, because I've there's watched, a little spot for one thing.
In TikToks, they show like using stasis, and so they'll like, you know, freeze something and then climb on it. Okay. Stasis, freeze something, hit it a bunch, fuse it to something, climb on it, whatever. But I think that you do get stasis later.
I don't doubt it. But then like the freezing water thing, I hate using that.
That was a horrible pain. So far, the Breath of the Wild story, I felt like, at least in the early going, was a little more engaging. Like, right now, in this one, in the story, I just feel like more of an open world and less of a narrative.
Yeah, I'm loving the story. I love the story in Breath of the Wild, because it was more Zelda-focused, Link-focused. And this one is even more so that. But the thing I didn't like about Breath of the Wild story was that it was Calamity Ganon. And so, like, it was almost just an embodiment of evil and not an actual person. And this one, you have an actual person, Ganon, to think about and focus. And I love having Ganon back. Like, he comes back in flashbacks, things like that. You know, you see him in the first cutscene. And so that, I think, has really elevated the story. And there's a little bit. In Breath of the Wild, you can find Link's memories.
Mm-hmm.
Have you started finding other people's memories in Tears of the Kingdom?
No, I haven't.
So I just stumbled across it. And that's the beautiful thing about these two games. Like, you just stumble across really major things. And so I was, you know, flying around. I was like, oh, there's a chalk outline or whatever, a big hieroglyphic thing of the Master Sword. I'm going to go check it out. So I go there. And then a random puddle comes up and it says, activate or interact with it, whatever. You get memories from all the different hieroglyphic signs etched into the world.
First of all, that is definitely these games' greatest strength, is that if you're stumbling around in the open world, if you're paying attention, you're still going to find narratively impactful things. Like, it feels like you're progressing even if you're not doing much. The thing, I can't even call it, it's not a gripe, it's just the thing that where Breath of the Wild still has a hair up here for me, is this one relies so heavily on the building mechanics, and frankly, I don't know how to say it, Chris, I'm just not that good. Like, when I'm building, I'll just straight up Google, like, how do I use this pile of stuff to beat these bad guys? Like, I don't have that. That's not, like, a good creative strength that I have, and it relies on that pretty heavily. Again, I'm not even going to call that a gripe. Just the one thing where it's like, I wasn't having to be that creative in Breath of the Wild, and I considered that a strength. And then I also narratively felt like Breath of the Wild moved a little, I don't know, a little quicker, maybe? This one feels like a slower burn. Maybe not. That could just be the rate of the play, but tremendous. Top 5 Switch game, I think, at a minimum. already, and I'm only about 10 hours in. Heather's also, she's probably closer to 20 hours in, I think. I've been fighting over it like children.
My biggest takeaway, so we can wrap up this part and get to Avatar stuff. Oh, they, speaking of Avatar, there is an RPG Avatar game in the works, which we've talked about before, but the art style is said to be similar to Breath of the Wild. But like, I don't, of course it won't be as good because it's Nintendo.
Sure.
But
it doesn't have to be could you as imagine, good to be fun. Like,
yeah. But like, could you imagine though? And also that game, I don't think it's going to be, I don't think you're playing as the Avatar. I think you're playing as one person, part of the White Lotus.
Cool.
But like, imagine an Avatar game where you're the Avatar. You have to use one or all four elements to solve puzzles, and also use like Future Industries tech to solve puzzles the same way. But other, I mean, this is almost a carbon copy of Tears of the Kingdom. But I don't care, whatever. Like,
whatever. Obviously, it's good, right? Copy good things.
Yeah. My biggest takeaway, two takeaways. One, you don't need the freaking hardware of a PS5 or Xbox or PC to make an amazing game. You don't need the graphics to make an amazing game, because this game is beautiful.
I will die on that hill. Absolutely.
And two, I hope video game developers take the success of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom and inspire them to switch up their formula. Because so many games have had the same freaking formula for 20 plus years. And like, Zelda could have just kept making games where you follow this chronological path, you go to a dungeon, you gotta find Zelda, whatever, go to the dungeon, go to this temple, whatever, get a new weapon, that weapon then unlocks another dungeon, go there, get a weapon. And then with Breath of the Wild, they're just like, forget all of what you learned previously. Whole new way to play. And they've made some two genre-defining games.
And
switch it up.
Two genre-defining games that fit beautifully together, yet do not feel like a rehash. Like, obviously, the engine and stuff, I get it. But you're definitively playing a different game and getting a different experience in a good way. And that's impressive. Thank you, Nintendo. I'll keep funneling you my paychecks time and time again like a sucker, just for the things like this that you do and you get really right. Chris, let's talk about murder and death and not murdered kinds of death, other kinds of death. Also, there we go. We got 5 through 1 today. Number 5, this is kind of a Chris specialty, if I may say so myself. Number 5 is Avatar 1.
Yeah, this is where me and Sean disagree the absolute most. Like, when I was initially making my list, this was like number 1. And the thing is, it was just a rough draft. And I was like, I think we can make separate lists, because you don't even have like my number 1 on your top 5.
Did not make my top 5. But listen, that inspired discussion, and that's important.
Yeah. Avatar wants death. Gives me goosebumps every time I see it, and I love it. It is the quintessential Avatar moment. This is probably one of the most important, impactful deaths in all of Avatar, because this is the first Avatar, right? One, and also this is of all this list, this is different because this is a peaceful, fairly peaceful death. He's on a freaking battleground. You know, he's just old. Like before this, we saw Juan, black hair, beard, young, and then we see him old, just even with Vatu gone, darkness could not be destroyed from this world. And then, like, right as he's dying, Robin says to him, like, we will never give up. We will be together for all your lifetimes. Wait, I'm sorry, I ruined that. She says, We will be together for all your lifetimes, and we will never give up. That is the freaking essence of the Avatar. Like, just never giving up. We'll be battling the forces of evil forever because it's a battle that's that important. I literally get goosebumps every time I watch this scene.
Let me rehash it for you. Old man dies in field, hallucinates famous last words.
F you, Sean.
Sorry, I meant to say that's what Sean from yesterday would have said. Sean from today is less concerned about the cool factor and more concerned with the narrative prominence and the emotional impact.
I want to read your response to me when I said, "What do you think my avatar want?" Your response was like, "Eh?" I was like, "What the heck?"
Because we hadn't discussed our various approaches yet, and like, yeah, my God, he's old, and he died in a field because he's fighting people, and he's old. Like, what he wants? He's too old. And then it turns out that Chris wanted to talk about emotions and feelings, and I respect that. Like, that's the Sean of yesterday talking. Sean of today thinks that five is a great choice for Avatar One, and depending on how big your goosebumps are, if you wanted to argue to make him higher, I understand. He's in the top half at a bare minimum, and that's great. Number four, Zhu, and you referenced page 381.
Yeah, Zhu from the Kyoshi novels. He is like the first lightning bender that we know of.
This
He and
is.
Kyoshi.
There's something about his death, I hope I word this right, where the sort of weird anticlimax of it is what makes it super cool. So essentially, and Chris will read it and you'll do better than I would, but like instead of like striking him down or some of the, like running a pebble through his heart multiple times or whatever, like just drops him. Like from the avatar state, and there's something so like dismissive about that in the coolest, in the most baller avatar way.
To preface this, they're fighting. Kyoshi is losing this fight because he shocks her with like several lightning strikes, and but she ends up like redirecting towards him. She gets up here in the fight. It says her eyes felt like they were leaking, not with tears, but light. She thought briefly about swinging his Zhu overhead, dashing him against the ground, and twisting him like a wet rag between her bare hands. He was surely more fragile than a solid iron bar. No, he needed to be shown what a true force of nature looked like. His men had to see him beaten, not by strength, but by retribution from the elements themselves. She switched her grip on him from his foot to his collar. She rose into the air, not with dust stepping, but a whirling vortex that sucked her higher into the sky. Zhu screamed and dangled from her grip. The tornado she rode blew the Daofei back. In this distance, they were so tiny and pathetic and human. Kyoshi extended her free hand, palm upward, and closed and curled her fingers closer together, and the flames accelerated by her wings hemmed them in. Many of the outlaws shrieked and threw themselves on the ground, rolling to put out the fires that had caught on their clothes. Kyoshi looked down the length of her arm at Zhu. He shielded her eyes from her inner light too harsh to take in. His mouth gaped open and shut like a fish. That's like he's losing air. The air was moving too fast for him to breathe. And then she says, like, within the book, this is bolded. You forget, Zhu, she said, in a legion of voices synchronized in the eye of the storm. There's always someone who stands before you in judgment, stands above you in judgment. then it goes on to say, what will you do now? She said, knowing that your every step will have consequences. She needn't have asked. Behind the Terran's eyes, there was a stronger, deeper outrage. One second, let me keep reading. Oh, Zhu. Zhu then. How does she look? She was scrutinizing France's election guard. And Zhu spout out a gout of flame in her face. So he's a firebender, she thought, as she diverted the flames off to the side with a tilt of her head. Like, so he's breathing fire at her, and she just nods it
Meh.
away. Like, how freaking powerful is she?
Meh.
The lighting, okay. Given away that it's so clear that the dragon's breath was first indication she had performed, she wasn't spreading. Chance for writing submission. So then it goes on to say, Kyoshi was the only thing holding him up. She opened her hand and watched him fall. By the time she touched back down to earth, the wall of fire that surrounded the Daofei had burned itself out. Anyway, just that simple act of, and the way they frame it is that Kyoshi is almost ascending to like some type of godhood ship. Like she is above his stupid Daofei traditions and whatever. Like, no, you think strength, you think your strength gives you power? Like, no, this is real strength. Like, and then the way they describe it afterwards from like onlookers, it says like a white ghost sucked the air and almost the life out of someone. That's what had happened. She like he was so high and the vortex took air out of him. He pretty much passed out, and then she dropped him to his death. Like freak, like no, all these most of these deaths aren't at the hands of for Kyoshi.
Of sort of a single act of.
Like of a good person, except for Kyoshi. Kyoshi's the only one I think on this list that has killed people.
Well, and
No,
she went
the only
out
good
of her
person.
way to make a
Okay, yeah.
specific display of this death. Like,
Yeah.
she has an inner monologue about how to do this the right way.
She's like, no, just beating him wouldn't be enough. I have to show I'm an effing god, and you guys are just ants to me.
Chris, the only thing that kept this, I think, from being higher, at least, some of the discussion we had was that in the end, that you don't have a lot of contact with Zhu as like your big bad. Like he's not really a present big, like kind of in an Ozai way, how they needed Azula, is that Zhu isn't really a present big bad. So it's a really cool display. It maybe like the only thing that keeps it from being even higher is just the fact that you're kind of dealing with the, what do you call it, like the mini boss. But it might be, it's, I don't know, it's such a cool display and it's really well written. I remember reading it twice, not because I didn't think I understand it. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. Like she says she was just gonna drop him, like four paragraphs of build up and then one sentence of she dropped him. And I just had to make sure that I didn't miss anything. But it's a great, it's a really great portion of a really great book. Speaking of.
And it also just highlights just like how many, yeah, we've talked about this before. Just the first Kyoshi novel has so many deaths in it.
It does. There are two themes to our whole list here that we will address at least in a very short way when we are done with the list. There's two themes here. Number three, Chris, while we're talking about good books and awesome deaths, is Kelsong. And
Kelsong.
a real heartbreaker here, and or a what a pivotal story turn. What a pivotal story turn moment when Kelsong dies on page 142, if you're interested.
Yeah, the thing about this is that it gets me is that Kyoshi and like Janja just killed Yun. In the eyes of Kyoshi, and like he's about to take her.
And as everybody, we all
It's
think that Yun is dead.
yeah, true. Yes. What's interesting here is Kyoshi is like so different from the Kyoshi that I just described. Like she almost this little girl who is trying to evade a kidnapper, like or some abusive father figure, and then the real father figure comes, and like she's almost like, will he believe me? Will he believe me that Jianju is a terrible person? And like he doesn't have to say anything. Like he believes her because he's like, I'm taking Kyoshi and we are leaving. And like there's a certain sense of ease that you read from Kyoshi's perspective of like finally, like he's here. Like 'cause I can't take on Jianju by myself. Like I'm weak. I don't know how to do any of this. Like I don't even want to be the avatar. She's so frazzled in this moment. So then you have Jianju and Kelsong and sorry, I sound like I was about to cry from the way my voice broke. And Jianju killed. I'm kidding. It's Jian and Jianju versus Kelsong. It was really interesting about this fight. So Kelsong says to Kyoshi, Kyoshi, run. He pushed her away and leaped at Jianju, bringing his staff down to create a gale of wind. Jianju brought earth to meet him, but they weren't fighting the same fight. Kelsung meant to blast his friend away, to knock the madness out of him, to overwhelm him with the least amount of harm done in the way of all air nomads. Jianju shaved off a razor of flint, no longer than an inch, sharp and thin enough to pass through the wind without resistance, and slice it where his victim was exposed and vulnerable. A spurt of blood came from the side of Kelsung's neck, from a finger length cut so clean and precise it was almost elegant. Jianju's expression flickered with a sadness that was deeper and truer than what he'd given to Yun as he watched his friend fall. Kelsung collapsed to the ground, his head bouncing lifelessly hard, his head bouncing lifelessly off the hard-packed earth. Those were the last things Kyoshi saw before the white glow behind her eyes took over her entire being. Freaking violent death. Like, and also it's sad because Kelsung wasn't trying. He was trying to really fight. Also, Kelsung was weakened from his fight with Tagaka. Like, he was already, like, both of them were kind of just at probably 10%. And Jianju was probably at like 50.
There's three fights in here on our whole 10 list, our whole top 10 list. Four, if you count number 7.5, where Yun dies, where that's just like it's sort of a hyper emotional circumstance, like sort of morally, or like somebody killing a friend, like not just betrayal, but literally killing a friend or a loved one. This one, gosh, it hits hard. It doesn't hit the hardest, but it hits hard. Not quite the hardest. No spoilers here. Really early in the book, too. Not really early, halfway through the book, maybe, give or take. But you have already become attached to
It's
Kelsong
like a
as like your
third,
as your father
maybe a
figure in the
quarter.
book. Yeah, a quarter, a third. Like he's in a so far kind of tumultuous book. He's like the stabilizing linchpin, and I don't think you
Yeah,
would expect him to die so fast.
he's like a lovable. He's like Iroh in the sense of being lovable, but probably yeah,
Violently
he's
deadly
just
in his own right.
like he is very much like Iroh. Like he is the father figure to someone. He is, lovable, big, a little bit robust. He's way taller than Iroh. Iroh's like 5. And I think Iroh's technically 5'3". Izuku in book one is like 5'5", and he is taller than Iroh. And Kelsung is like as tall as Kiyoshi, but really huge. And yeah, see this character that you come to really like it. Just kill, like he is the reason behind Kyoshi's vengeance. Like Kyoshi is pissed off mainly because he killed Kelsung.
And that remains her driving motive for a while in the novel.
Yeah.
Chris, number two, Pali.
Ooh, yeah, Pali. What people probably thought could have, I think when we first started talking about this list, you said that this was like your,
I think
you said this was the coolest death, or this was the best death.
I think when we started talking about it on show, we did, and it wasn't until today when we were putting this together, or on the 19th, not today, literally for you watchers, when I had to stop and think, is it really more impactful than the next one? And I decided no. But no, I think initially this is part of what inspired us to, like, hey, we should think about this in a list form. So the way it happens is really the high impact part here, like the literal way that it happens, and that's a combustion bender having a sheet of metal wrapped around her face before she fires. She literally
Holy crap.
explodes her own face, and if that's not the
It
most sort of independently violent way to be murdered, I don't know
Yeah.
what is.
So when I'm thinking of my list, I was putting just straight volume real quick. When I was putting together, I forgot to remind you throughout this recording. When I was putting together my list, I thought about how cool the deaths were, action scenes, fighting, emotion, and story-driven things. So I was thinking about all those things. This one is like it's lacking a little bit on story directive and emotion because it's a villain that barely had any lines and things like that. Does have some story elements to it because she her death does inspire does allow for Zaheer to let go of his worthy attachments. But on a coolness factor, this is number one. Like this is metal as heck. Like we
Metal.
know that like we know the destructive power of combustion bending. It breaks solid rocks. It is like an explosion thrown your way. And it was all in one freaking dome. And like sound effects were it sound
Such a
effects was
heavy metal thunk when it.
like ooh, but like with a little echo to it, that was like, no, her head is gone. It's
That piece of metal is now separated from the rest of her body.
and then there was like a little cloud smoke. Yeah. Like.
It's easily the coolest just from like watching it, sort of action movie entertainment
Yeah.
value. I'd
Yeah.
agree
My
it's.
reaction was. My reaction was, holy crap! Like,
Yeah, I
that's
just.
the
About lost my
type
marbles when I saw it the first
Yeah.
time. That's amazing. I agree that sort of narratively it's a little light, but man, you straight up pity. You know Zaheer at this point. Like you're kind of over sort of agreeing with some of his motives and things at this point in the story, but you straight up pity him for a solid, I don't know, 30 seconds or a minute till we get to the next part where he literally flies. Then you kind of stop pitying him. You're like, all right, she was holding you down. But you straight up feel bad for a villain for a solid minute.
It's interesting when he knows Pali dies, he's pissed off because the way he takes out Korra seemed almost he airbends her with such a force at that point. That like knocks her out. But it was so emphatic that you could tell he was having a reaction to it.
Playing
And then he
angry,
just
not
let that
playing
stuff
smart.
go. Yeah, but then he just let it go. It was like, let go of my earthly tethers.
That
Become
was
the wind.
the channeling of the emotions, sort of the proper hailing from it. But gosh, that is straight up one of my favorite scenes in Avatar, just top to bottom. If you get to go beyond the death and factor in the flight and the larger episode, that's one of my favorite scenes in the whole show, hands down. Great moment, Chris. So that was number two. Before we get to number one, I want to do two things. First, I want to point out a couple of common themes that people probably noticed. First of all, is that some really cool deaths are in Korra Book Three, really cool deaths,
Yeah.
and some really cool deaths in the first Kiyoshi novel. So that's where the majority of these came from. We didn't design it that way or anything. It just, like, indisputably, those are the most murderous pieces of entertainment for murder value. But Christopher, before we jump into number one, I thought we would go watch Mojo Style and list off some of our honorable mentions. That okay? Some of them that we had were, I think, probably the most impactful honorable mentions we had were Ming-Hwa and Gazan, who they died separately in the same episode. Cool. Separately, but cool, yeah. Feels tied together.
If Ming-Hwa somehow wasn't alive, Gazan made sure she was dead.
Yeah, kind of took care of both of them. She definitely was, yeah, but...
I think out of, like, the good characters, Mako and Kyoshi are the only characters that have killed somebody.
Yeah, Mako straight up kills Ming-Hwa and Gazan. Again, we're talking about both. This book three, we're talking in a span of, like, three episodes, all these awesome deaths happening.
Like, in the way she screams, shout out to Great Elisle, is on top of the sound of the electrocution. Like, holy crap.
It's terrifying. Gazan's isn't as sort of painful to watch. It's a little more off-screeny, but it's still a really cool way to go out. He's like, I'm bringing you with me if I'm going down or something like that. Kind of corny, but it works.
Yeah. Pretty much, I'm not going back to jail.
I serve my nickel. You come and take me. Jet, presuming that Jet is dead, I think that's a safe presumption.
Just dead, yeah.
Sparky Boom Man, Combustion Man. I assume he's dead, but is that debatable?
Oh, he's definitely dead.
You think so? Okay, yeah. That's fine.
Fell off a cliff.
Chris, remind everybody oh, yeah, he did fall off a cliff. I was just thinking about the boomerang to the head and then the internal... Well, I guess... Yeah, okay, yeah. Chris, remind everybody
got a concussion.
At least. Remind everybody where you stand on the did Aang actually die?
You know what? I was thinking about that. Like, should we? My stance is firm that he did not die.
My stance remains that he did not. I think it's worth mentioning that that's a common one on the internet where people talk about important deaths.
It's a good, just a good to bring up because I had that thought earlier today. Someone might mention the Fang died, but I'm in a firm camp that he did not die because the Avatar spirit would have just broken off.
Immediately, right? You don't reattach that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no... You can't... What's the saying? Once something's after something, toothpaste... I got it. Once the toothpaste is out the
tube,
you call the toothpaste? At the tube, you can't put it back in.
You can't unsqueeze that tube of toothpaste, I think is how white people say it, at least. I feel like I heard that was a grandma thing for me, personally. You can't unsqueeze that toothpaste. Yeah. Not the grandpa that was in the war, the other grandma.
Shout out to those vets.
Happy early Veterans Day, before we forget. Happy early Veterans Day. There are more deaths. Those are the ones that we mentioned as close enough to be honorable mentions from on-screen coolness and or impact. Any others we're forgetting? Both Chris and me rhetorically asking the audience as if this were Dora the Explorer. Let us know in the comments which one need to make our honorable mentions or our list. I think our list is scientifically proven to be 100% perfect, but you can tell us which honorable mentions that we're forgetting. That's fine. Chris, let's talk
about... Or tell us your rankings, your top fives, at least.
Give us your whole list. That'd be cool to see. Hey, tell us your qualifiers, right? If you're going for cool factor, and so that your friend doesn't think you're an emotionless jackass just because he has a different in mind. Give us your ranking.
Your response to me was like so just like, do we even need to include this? I was like,
what? I thought we were talking about cool stuff.
Of course it's not cool, an old man dying on a field, but It's, I get goosebumps every time, Sean. There's a story elements to it. It's...
And I probably had, at this point, until working, this is my segue, at that point, I probably still had Pelea as number one, and our current number one, because I wasn't thinking about everything. I was just thinking about just on-screen punch, you know, or in-text punch, whatever. But, you know, we had a great talk, and you righted the ship. Chris, thanks for being patient with me. And that led us to put number one, I think kind of unanimously. I think we both were totally happy with this spot. And that's Amon and Tarlok in a homicide-suicide in the
murder-suicide
and most sort of weirdly metal of ways.
This scene is freaking...
It makes you feel bad for the bad guys, Chris.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, almost as if, like, their whole lives, they've been on this path of their whole lives just because of their father. They're going away, brothers, and, like, Amon, Notok has almost this new sense of beginning. He's back with his brother, and he loves his brother, even though he took away his bending. He loves his brother.
He's got, like, a whole new driving force behind whatever his next insidious plan is, which, again, when we're talking about good villains, it's not that his plan was horribly unfounded, I guess, or his motives were horribly unfounded. There's, like, a touching feeling. You're feeling touching feelings as they're driving away in this boat, talking to each other like brothers, and you're like, oh, it'll be fun to see those guys in book two. Bam! Never mind.
Yeah. Like, he's driving. And it's like Notok and Tarlok back together again.
And then
we'll be just like the old times, brother. And then Tarlok says, yes, it'll be just like the old times. He unscrews whatever
thing is. Gas can tank thing.
Yeah. Takes the electric glove, put it in.
And then us.
And wait. Right before that, right when he says, it'll be just like the old times, brother. He unscrews it, puts his hand there. Right before the explosion, Notok, I feel like at this moment,
he's not a mom anymore. He's a brother now. Yeah, like, he's a family.
Yeah, exactly. He is more humanized in this moment than he was before. Before his big bad villain stuff, saying all this really cool quotes and stuff, and now he's just a human brother. And right before the explosion, he has this, like, somber kind of look, looking off in the distance, and a tear is flickering right off of him. And the tear's almost going...
off of Amon driving. Keep this in mind. Not Tarlok, about to kill them both. The guy driving shedding a tear of happiness. Yeah. Do you understand?
I don't,
sitting a tear of happiness. Happy. Or, like, redempt, like a second chance.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But, happy's probably not, like, the right, but...
It's something. A heavy emotion. A
tear of hope? Yeah, it's just unbearable. Yeah. Like, and him driving, Notok driving, shedding a tear, and then Tarlok. And then all of us, Chris, sitting in our peaceful homes, watching episode 12 of a potentially, you know, a short series of this new show. All of a sudden that happens, and you're like...
Holy crap, I don't know how Mike and Brian on a Y7 show got away with stuff that just they got away with depicting murder, suicide, and also a head explosion, and also a woman being a fisticate or whatever.
At least by season three, you're like okay with the sort of demonic possession and bad spirits and murder suicides with we didn't really have a grasp of scope of
this
Korra emotions here.
What range Korra? What depths?
This is just bloodbenders who are going to get thrown in jail somewhere, and you know,
and
that's all.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is Tarlok feels like they're too powerful for the world, almost like they needed some type of check, and this was the opportunity to do that. Like, he is atoning for almost redeemed.
I read it more that way. I took it more the second way, Chris. Not that the first way that I think is wrong or anything, but just my initial reaction to it was his atonement to the world behalf of them both. More so than like the need for checks and balance. Not that they couldn't have been twice.
No, no, no. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But yeah,
it hits hard.
It's a freaking
it hits hard.
Again, I don't know how they got away with that on a Y7. When when Korg came on Netflix, and Netflix shows good disclaimers about different things that might be cause type of trigger for people or something like that. It was like on each episode, it will show what could be a trigger for any episode going forward. So like episode one, it's like boring. This show depicts suicide, murder, and other stuff. What the heck is this here? It was like on episode one, Legend of Korra, and then like, well, this doesn't show up until episode 12 or something. But it like, how is this on a Y7 show? Don't know.
Terrifying. My only regret is that we had to end on like a real serious one, right? Like it would have been a little easier to end on Pali and then go to bed and just like sleep easy. But no, we kept talking about Tarlok Nuatak dying right before we're done. That's great. That was a great list. I can't wait to hear other people's lists. I hope people will share down in the comments.
One of these days, I want to make a "What if Amon survived?" video.
Interesting.
Don't know where it'll go because
Does any no, I'm not gonna spoil it. No, that sounds great. Hey, thanks for watching. I will put all of the details down in the description, just like always. And if you feel like leaving us a like or a comment or a sub or a review, whatever, if you feel compelled to leave any of that, that'd be amazing. If not, thanks for listening anyway. And this has been Avatar The Last Podcasters. My name is Sean. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. We will talk to you next time.
Go Lakers, hopefully. I still have confidence.
Might be too late for that, Chris.
Right now, as of course, they're down 2-0 in the Western Conference Final. But next game, whoever wins this game is going to win it all.
All. How about that? That's big.
All.